So now let me invite Jason Wilcox, who is the director of engineering in my team, to demystify more of Cortana Analytics for us. Jason?
Thank you. Let's see if the mic gets working. I have to say I have an absolute pleasure to be here today. It is really awe-inspiring to see what you can do. And one of the great pleasures I have in my job is that I get to talk to every one of you, every customer out there who comes to our platform, and the things they imagine doing with data just surprises me every day. What I want to do today is sort of motivate my excitement and sort of demystify a little bit Cortana Analytics by telling a story about some of the experiences we've had at Microsoft working on some of the biggest big data projects imaginable. So you have to really imagine what's the biggest data project that Microsoft has tackled in the last few years. I'm not sure that this is now currently the biggest. There might actually be a bigger one than this currently going on. But if you think back to 2005, the really hardest problem we could face was search. And for those of you who remember what Bing was like, Bing is the Microsoft search engine, we'd been in the business for years. And Google was just trouncing everybody, not just us, but just everyone in the space. I love the expression, they weren't a brand, they were a habit. And Microsoft said, well, we have to catch up. And he decided to really catch up and invested a massive amount of resources to do so. Now, why was I excited about this? I've been spending most of my career inside and outside of Microsoft working on big data problems. And there just was so much data to play with. Billions of documents, trillions of relationships, every day, petabytes of data being collected, analyzed, and looked at. For me, it was extremely exciting. And so I left a team at that time, which was the data platform, which is SQL Server, and joined the Bing team and worked as the manager of the ranking and relevance team for advertising. And later on, I worked on how you process and pipeline this data. And we did what you'd imagine everybody did in 2005 at Microsoft. We decided to muscle our way through the problem. And we threw the best and brightest we could find. We went off and hired the best data scientists in the world. We hired tons of people. We threw people at it. And this was a very standard Microsoft approach to hard problems. But the problem was it didn't work. From 2005 to 2009, we kept losing share. And now our investment is just staggeringly large at this problem. And we were working crazy hours, trying everything we could to figure out how to turn this ship. So why was it so hard? It was hard because it really wasn't just a big data problem. It's an organizational problem. It's frankly a problem that we face in almost every industry we see. It's hard to hire data scientists. And for those of you who are data scientists in statistical analysis, you guys are really lucky. It is really hard to hire the best at the quantity you need to search the space with the existing set of tools today. Big problems require a lot of people. It's not just the analytics. You have to set them up. You have to build the apps. You have business models. You have to get the data from one place to another. And all the people you apply to the problem forces you into a problem where you build silos. And then it's hard to communicate, and you're not leveraging each other. And frankly, the search problem is a tough problem in itself. Every day, the environment changes. You know, what people find relevant one day is completely different or drifts off what you find the next day. Optimizing what ad works changes depending on what ad you just showed. So these are hard problems, and it's not very different than the kinds of problems that our customers ask us to do. So what do we do about it? Around 2008, we brought on a man you may know whose name is Chi Lu. And Chi Lu came from Yahoo and had built their advertising system. And he brought a completely new perspective into our thinking and made an organizational change from a culture standpoint that has affected how we think about services and big data across our entire company. He became laser focused on one measure, which may seem obvious now, which was the relevance measure we use, NDCG, but the relevance measure of search results. And then he started asking questions at every single meeting. So how many experiments did you run a day? And this was something that might seem obvious, but it really wasn't. If you have, you know, you're throwing your very best data scientists at the problem, the number of experiments you run is basically how much experimenting they can do. And so to start measuring that seems self-evident. We just count the number of data scientists that we have applied to the problem. But it turns out he asked something else as well. He said, now you have to go make 100 times more people work on the problem. And as we mentioned, you can't hire enough data scientists. And this was a huge cultural shift. In order to deliver on that promise, we had to do something extremely risky. I don't know how many of you have been in projects before where your company decides to go bet on a big infrastructure change. You know, let's go build the data warehouse that rules them all. Let's gather up all the data. Let's go ensure that everybody can, get all the compute power they need. They're risky. They cost a lot of money. They take a lot of energy. And your opportunity cost while you're doing them is very large. And they often fail. But we took that risk, and we built some really interesting technology. And I have not highlighted everything we built at Bing to make this happen. But we did build some really interesting things. One of them is an exabyte storage platform. And an exabyte storage platform was sort of unheard of, at least for most of the world at that time. And that allowed us to have everybody store all the data and access all the data that we were collecting, no matter what the silos were before. We built tools that made all that data approachable. And not just approachable for the data scientists, but for everybody who participates. The developers, the pipeline managers, the ETL folks. We built layers on top of it that allowed you to access the data through Excel, build queries against raw data through Excel, and scale it, visualize it. And very, very specifically, we built a really interesting tool, and the internal name for the tool is called Ether, and it's for machine learning and exploring models. And it was optimized around collaboration. Collaborate and help your data science run as many experiments as you can. And for really big problems in machine learning, usually what you're doing is you're tweaking one piece of it. And so to allow everybody who wanted to participate to tweak the models without having to hold in the whole thing, this tool was amazing. And what that did was it had kind of an interesting effect. It really helped. I mean, it really helped. Now, it's hard to read this chart, and it won't mean all that much, but on the, I guess, your left, on the left side, this is the measure of relevance. And it doesn't really matter what it is in terms of the actual number, but you can see it steadily went up. And for those of you who've used Bing over the years, I hope you've seen it really has steadily gone up. Bing is a very effective search tool today, and it wasn't in 2005. The other thing that happens is on the right side, this is the count of our monthly experiment rate. And the number is exponentially growing. And for those of you who might catch this, you might wonder, why does it have to exponentially grow, but the results don't exponentially grow in relevance? That's because as you achieve more optimal solutions or near optimal solutions, it gets harder and harder to find insight. So you have to explore the space faster and faster if you're going to keep improving the system. Now, all that's great for relevance. The question is, did it matter to our business? And it really did. From 2009, a year after Qi arrived, to 2015, we've doubled our Microsoft search share. And, you know, if you use Bing and Google today, you will see that they produce very comparable results. So it worked. Unfortunately, it's really still a hard problem. And most of the questions we ask of data still is hard. Why is it so hard? It's hard because you have to know what to invest in. You'd have to take big risks. You have to know what you're doing. These are all things that, you know, if you think about how tools are today, it's challenging. It's very, very challenging to get this right. The thing that makes me so excited about Cortana Analytics is you don't have to invest the thousands of people that Bing does or any of the other big companies we know about who do these type of things in order to get almost all of the same set of advantages. And as we go, and you look at the Cortana Analytics, and this is the slide that Joseph showed earlier, we're going to keep adding to this suite set to make this easier and easier for the world. And as Joseph mentioned, he went through a lot of these. I'm not going to go in each one of these in details. And for the rest of the talk, I'm going to start going through what I think of as the common themes across these services that motivates why we've built them and how they are similar to each other as a set of services that help you solve big analytic problems. You're going to get to see all of these over the next 2 days. They're fantastic services. They're great demos. They're great tutorials through them. But in order to sort of position it as to why it's so important, let me go through some of the questions that we get asked to help with every day. And these are some really interesting problems, and you'll recognize them. I'm going to butcher the name because I don't speak this language, but ThyssenKrupp is an elevator company. And they want to improve their cost structure and reduce the amount of maintenance that they have to do with elevators. Turns out it's kind of an interesting problem. They collect all the data every day about the elevator usage, and it's expensive to regularly send someone out to do maintenance. More interestingly, because they're gathering all the diagnostics, they can send the person out and tell them exactly what to fix. Instead, before, they'd go out for maintenance, and you would just work on the elevator. Now they know exactly, and they go out, and they fix the one thing that needs to be fixed, and they go out, and they reduce their costs substantially. Personalized offers, I think most of us recognize that every retailer in the world is trying to get better customer service. But when you look at the challenge of combining online stores, offline stores, and then taking that data and connecting it with your CRM systems, your sales systems, your supply chain management systems, suddenly it becomes a really big data problem where there's lots of insights to be found. This is one of my favorite. When we hear churn prediction, most people think of things like customer churn. But you can apply these techniques all over the world. Tacoma is a city that is just south of here, for those of you who aren't from the Seattle area. And they're using this, and we're helping them look at dropout rates. Can schools predict which students are most in danger of dropping out and customize what they do with those students to help them stay in school, increase graduation rates? These are hard problems. And they're not that much different than the Bing one, it turns out, as we go, we'll go on and we'll talk about. Last one I want to talk about is smart buildings. A lot of you may have heard about smart buildings. The efforts to make a smart building, that's kind of a strange statement. What is a smart building? My favorite story about smart buildings are these sensors they're putting on bricks. These are really neat sensors. They do things like tell you the shock value on a brick and the temperature and moisture. What's really interesting is they've now made these sensors so that you don't need batteries. The act of sending a wave to make the request, the wave for the request into the, is enough power into the sensor to give a reading and send back the results. Now this gives you an unprecedented amount of data that you can look at across all of your buildings. Carnegie Mellon was able to save about 20% of their cost structure on their buildings. But if you go one step further, it's not just about cost savings. Imagine you're an apartment building and you want to make a store, you want to make it pleasant for your folks who are in their tenants. You can use the data not just to save costs, but to make a better experience for your customers. So there's a lot of these questions out there, and a lot of them have something, a couple things in common. The first thing that we just highlight over and over again in all of our talks is it takes a lot of different people to deliver on any one of these solutions. It's not just the data scientist, it's not just the ETL designer, the data, database designer, it's the CRM, the salespeople, the application builders, the business models. Everything has to come together to deliver something that really adds value to the world. The other thing in common is they all sort of follow the same pattern. And this slide, by the way, is the one I take the longest on. I'm taking a lot of liberty. Everyone who's done data problems and done analytics may see this slightly differently, but there's sort of an idealized version. Someone asks you a question, and you say, okay, so what data is available? And for those who have run into this, it's actually hard. I don't know what data is available. I knew about the data set that I worked with last week. Maybe there's a data warehouse that I can search through and figure out. But if it's raw data, if there's data across your organization, I don't know what the other departments are collecting. I don't know what the CRM data is relative to the marketing data, the sales data. I don't necessarily have at the tips of my fingers what everybody has. But let's just say I go off and I solve that problem. I find the data set I think I need is going to be useful for my problem. Then I ask, how do I gain access to it? And gaining access is hard. It's one of my favorite aspects of our managed services and a lot of what you saw Joseph talk about. It's really much tougher than you think. The owner of the data may not be able to give it to you because they simply don't know if you have rights to it. Should I give it? Is there PII data, personal data that I can't share? Even if I want to give it to you, do you have a place to put it? Do you have the computational power to do it? I can't let you do it on my database because my database is working on an application. And so one of the things that really you struggle with is how do you make that easier? How do you make it easier that if you have the data, you can go do the computation? Finally, you get your data and you start shaping it. You can't do analysis without shaping data. Raw data is always dirty. Even if it comes out of a data warehouse, you usually are mixing it with data and you have to change things. Missing values, abbreviations, all kinds of things. And then you get to run your first experiment. And if you go back to the way Microsoft was muscling Bing for a while, we hired the best and brightest data scientists. And they run their first experiment after doing 1 through 3. All right. For me, by the way, running first experiment is almost always just doing a visual. And then what's the first thing I realize? Well, my data's not shaped right. So I go back and shape it. And that's the next thing I realize. Well, I need more data. I don't have enough compute power, so I have to get more access. And then I realize, wait, there's more. And this goes looping and looping. I need to find more data sets. If I'm really unlucky, it turns out we don't even collect the data that I want. I got to ship a new product just to find out. You know, I have to add a temperature sensor to that brick. Good luck. Got to tear down the building, rebuild the building. It turns out, and for the data scientists, and this is very targeted in that statement, there's been a lot of studies of how data scientists and analytic folks spend their time. And I use data scientists as a broad word, so it really means everything from the machine learning folks to the business analytics. And you know, it depends on which study you read, but it's somewhere between 60 and 85% of their time is just spent in 1 through 3. And what does that mean? That means your very best people for doing data analysis and finding insights, they're not doing any of that. They're spending their time fighting the system. If you go back to the Bing story, what was the first thing she said? Go speed up the number of experiments you can run. You can't throw people at it, so you better make it easier for them. Then you're back to that infrastructure. All right, so now we've got some insights. Insight without action is not very useful. Turns out you don't find very many insights, but when you do, turns out most of your insights aren't useful. It's the truth. I have a great story for this. A couple months ago, I was listening to National Public Radio, and up comes a big data study. This is a really interesting study. They took the United States and they divided it into regions. And then they sourced tweets from those regions. And they ran a sentiment analysis on it, negative or positive. And they used, I don't know how anybody thought to do this. This is just sort of a mind-boggling question you might ask. Hey, what's the heart attack rate of those regions? Does the sentiment of the tweets originating from the regions predict heart attack rates? And I really don't know why someone asked this question. Here's the scary thing, though. It outpredicts the top 10 medical factors of those regions. This is a marvelous insight, completely useless, but marvelous. What are you going to do? You going to move? Did you read the tweets that were negative? Did they cause the heart attacks? I mean, it's really a tough, interesting insight. I am sure there is some, and I hate to say this because it does speak a little bit to my age, I'm sure there is some young gun out there who's going to figure out a new business the way sort of Uber does around this insight. But until you do, it's a useless insight. It's amusing, we laugh at it, but it doesn't help us. So the big challenge is you're searching that space. You're limited by how much insights you have. Most of your time isn't spent on finding them. Occasionally, you find something interesting. And now you're into the decision tree. There's two things that happen. It's interesting one time. Someone looks at it and says, I know what to do. And they go and change their behavior. Now you've gotten action on it. Turns out, that's not that interesting. It might be interesting once. What you really want to do is operationalize those insights. You want to get the feedback. You want what Bing gets. You want to be able to change people's behavior by showing them an ad that then predicts what the next ad is going to do. You want to learn from the data. So you need to operationalize those insights. And you can either do that by operationalizing reporting. You know, you think about someone receiving a new report every month. You know, what stores should I open? What stores should I close? You know, every month getting a report. Or maybe I want to make, and as Joseph mentioned in some of the scenarios, I want to just make my software smarter. Let's go put product recommendations directly in my e-commerce site that just gets better recommendations as the person behaves and does things. And this is the really, really terrible challenge. And I love the example of what have we been doing for the last 30 years that is now fundamentally different in the cloud world. Because for the last 30 years, what you did is you handed it to someone else to operationalize it. Let's think about the handoff. You spent all this time focusing on searching the space to find an insight. You finally found something interesting, and somebody else has to go implement it. And when they do, you're bound to get something wrong. It just happens. You do use R for your statistical analysis, use Mathematica, use MATLAB, use SAS, and use whatever tools you do for doing statistical analysis. And then the next thing you do to operationalize it, you have to code everything in PHP. You know, it's not bad. It works. We have lots of great examples of this, but it's expensive and it slows you down. So how can Cortana Analytics help? Now, I'm hoping as I go through these themes that it just echoes Joseph. That as we go through this, you keep thinking back to the demos he gave. So I'm going to show you a few pieces of snapshots of our product as we go through these themes. But really, I want you to think about, does it resonate? Are these things that you saw that we are delivering in Cortana Analytics? And I'll go through them in detail right now. You want a platform. You want a platform that's fully managed. We emphasize it over and over again because of those first three steps. When you don't have to fight the infrastructure and you can just spin up what you want to compute, it is a glorious thing. I can't figure out a slide to show you that demonstrates this, I'll be honest. So instead, I took snapshots of provisioning services. They're all managed services. All of Cortana Analytics is a managed service, or a set of managed services. Event Hub for data ingest, I think Joseph covered all of these, Data Factory, HD Insight, Stream Analytics. They're all managed services. You don't have to fight your infrastructure. You want a platform that works with all types of data. And this is sort of very obvious now in the Hadoop ecosystem. It's becoming obvious for folks who live in the relational world and data warehouses. But if you want to connect data, insight comes from connecting data sets with other data sets. You don't get to pick the shape that the data was envisioned in. You want to be able to look at video. You want to be able to look at unstructured blob data. You want to look at relational data warehouses. You need a platform that lets you do that. And you also need it at any scale. And I say that because when I tell the Bing story, it's really easy to think that we only think about exabyte and petabytes. But a lot of analysis, I mean, the vast majority of data analysis done on small data sets. And so you want a platform that lets you do that seamlessly. As we talked about in the previous keynote, there isn't anything better I can think of than Azure Data Lake for this. You throw whatever you want at this, small or large, any type of data. You've got a platform that you can put all of our computation on top of. You can put the data warehousing to query against it. You can put all the Hadoop ecosystem and other tools that are coming down the pike, whatever that data is, and you don't have to fight the system. It's all built on open standards. I mean, it is. It's just a. And I have to tell you, the other thing about Azure Data Lake is this is the storage system that came out of Bing. It's the one the whole company uses for storing our data. Now, it's been modified for public consumption and, you know, and made a little bit more friendly for it to use, but this is the big innovation that came out of Bing, or one of them. You absolutely want a platform that helps you operationalize. You really want this. You want to go from ad hoc exploration, where you're moving fast, to operationalizing. And you can't do it everywhere. But wherever you can, you want to make that as easy as possible. Don't want to fight the system. And we've already shown this, and this is what I meant by there's a lot of themes here. I can't think of a better example than doing an anomaly detection algorithm in Azure ML, Azure Machine Learning, writing it in R, and just publishing it. And this thing isn't just published as a web service. You can publish the training for models. And if you can publish the training for models as a web service, that means Azure Data Factory can automate for you training data as it comes in, scoring data as it's happening in real time. You can call it from Excel. You should be able to get to it in any way you can. Which brings up collaboration and sharing. The lesson that sort of took a lot of cultural change inside of Bing was everybody needs to participate. You find insights the best when all different people, diversity and different points of view, are looking at data as a way of life. And so you want to connect all these different ecosystems that are inside your organization so they're taking advantage and getting the most value out of data. And that's a hard thing to do. There's many big infrastructure players that have tried to do this, and it's very, very hard to do. But you want a platform that is pushing this. We have two really good examples of this I want to show you. We mentioned the Azure Data Catalog. The Azure Data Catalog, it's in public preview right now, allows you to publish data assets. It will allow you to publish any type of data assets as in the fullness of as we keep going forward. It allows you to publish your data assets that are on-premise, in warehouses, in cubes, in the cloud, wherever you happen to put them. It keeps track of all those data assets. And over time, we're going to integrate Azure Data Catalog into our Cortana Analytic services. So from those services, you can find the assets that you need, and you're connecting these different experiences and different diverse set of tools. One of the other things I want to just mention about Azure Data Catalog, because I just like taking the thunder away from later sessions, is it does something quite unique. It allows almost a social network to annotate the data. So you can go look at a data set and say, this was useful, record that fact, or say, hey, this column really means this. And that's the kind of thing, when you think about scaling across an entire organization, I mean, I don't know how many people have worked in a back-end system and asked the question of, can you just show me the revenue? You know, how many different revenues are there? There's profit, there's net. I mean, you know, everyone has a different definition of calculating revenue. Wouldn't it be nice right there and then to say, hey, by the way, we use this in the following sets of experiences or experiments or reports. This is the revenue we're using. The other one I want to talk about, and again, this was also talked about earlier, is the Cortana Analytics Gallery. Because it's Azure Data Catalog is great for internal. We're sharing our ecosystems. But in the modern world of analytics, a lot of learning doesn't come from your organization. It comes from without. And this is an opportunity for you to publish your experiments, solutions, publish finished APIs, and it's also an opportunity to go pull them in. I hope this isn't a surprise given how much we've done in the recent last couple years to say openness is important. But it's really important. Agility isn't achieved when you have to monolithically live in one box. There's too much going on. The world is changing too fast. I think Joseph gave the example of today's Spark looks like the biggest thing. We don't know what's going to be the biggest thing in 3 or 4 years. You want a platform that embraces this. Not only do we embrace open source, but most, if not all, of our services are extensible. You can pick and choose the pieces you need for your problem. You don't have to deal with the entire thing at once. You can pick the right tool for the right problem for the right role in your organization. There isn't a better example than HD Insight, although actually the Azure ML we're using R and Python is a pretty good example. This is our service. We manage Hadoop clusters for you. And we're not just managing Hadoop clusters that are exactly one set of APIs and capabilities. We support Hadoop, HBase, Storm, Spark. We're going to support the entire Hadoop ecosystem on Linux. You should not be blocked on what you do computationally and how you think about data. And the best thing about all these services is not only do they work on HDFS, they also work, because Azure Data Lakes is HDFS compliant, they work on Azure Data Lakes. So you get the full scale, from big to small, the full performance gains of that innovation. Okay, so this is the obvious one that we pitch. You want a platform that helps you do the whole problem. If you have an organization and you want to make the most out of data, you want it all. You want somebody to help you ingest the data. You want someone to analyze it, prepare it, publish it, and consume it, and most importantly, take action on it. And I could do a pretty good job of trying to show you some slide shots on this. But I prefer to build off of the American Eagle car thing and talk about that same type of innovation in the everyday cars that we have today. I don't know how many of you know, but most of our cars today, it's about 75% of all cars manufactured, now have a standardized way of getting diagnostic and driving habits off of the car. So this is a video that shows an end-to-end experience of that. Let's see if we can roll the video.
Supercomputers have moved out of the lab and are now parked in our garage. These cutting-edge automobiles contain a myriad of sensors, giving them the ability to track and monitor millions of events every second. We expect that by 2020, most of these cars will be connected to the internet. Imagine tapping into this wealth of data to provide best-in-class safety, reliability, and driving experience. Cortana Analytics is a fully managed big data and advanced analytics suite that enables you to transform data into intelligent action. Today, we want to introduce you to the Cortana Analytics Connected Car Solution Accelerator. Here's a quick overview of the components of this solution. When you deploy it, these components are provisioned inside your Azure subscription. The solution leverages event hubs for ingesting millions of vehicle telemetry events into Azure, and then uses stream analytics for gaining real-time insights on vehicle health and persists that data into long-term storage for richer batch analytics. It takes advantage of machine learning for anomaly detection in real time and batch processing to gain predictive insights. HD Insight is leveraged to transform data at scale, and Data Factory handles orchestration, scheduling, resource management, and monitoring of the batch processing pipeline. Finally, Power BI gives this solution a rich dashboard for real-time data and predictive analytics visualizations. Car manufacturers, insurance companies, and dealerships can gain real-time predictive insights on vehicle health and driving habits to always be one step ahead and offer top-notch, personalized customer service. Try out the Connected Car Solution Accelerator today.
Now, there's a couple of really exciting things about that. One is it's end-to-end. The other is coming will be the ability to build applications that deploy end-to-end, not just as the individual pieces. The other really exciting thing is everyone in this audience who attends the tutorial this afternoon, I think at 3:45, can learn how to build that in 2 hours. It'll take you 2 hours, less than 2 hours, to build that end-to-end. And that's a pretty amazing platform. Look, key takeaways. Cortana Analytics is a platform that is fully managed, supports all types of data of any size. It helps you operationalize. You can share and collaborate across your entire organization. It's an open platform that's extensible, and it really does support you end-to-end. Thank you very much.